to order for February 5th, regular meeting of the Investment Oversight and Audit Oversight Committees at 10:32. Except as provided by law, no action shall be taken on any item not appearing on today's agenda. The Oversight Committees encourage public participation. If you wish to speak on any agenda item, please do so during the general public comment period. Public comments may also be submitted electronically by emailing response@ocgov.com. As a reminder, please be aware that there are microphones throughout the room to record the meeting. Please try to keep side conversations to a minimum. When you are speaking, please turn your microphone on and the red light indicates a live microphone. Please set all cell phones to mute or vibrate during the duration of the meeting. Thank you, and I'll now ask the clerk to call the roll, please.
Thank you. Members, please indicate your presence when I call your name. Tim Johnson.
Present.
Mark Willey.
Here.
Doug Chafee.
Algebra proxy for Supervisor Chafee.
Katrina Foley. Michelle Aguirre.
Here.
Drew Atwater.
Here.
Yvonne Roden.
Here.
Larry Himmel.
Here.
And Dr. Stephen Bean.
Here.
Thank you. And noting that we do have a quorum.
Excellent. Thank you for that. At this time, we'll take public comments from any members of the public wishing to speak on any agenda item or any other topics under the subject matter jurisdiction of this committee, of these committees. Are there any public members, are there any members of the public here today who wish to speak? Please raise your hand now.
Seeing none.
All right, excellent. At this time, committee members may make announcements, comments, request information, give direction to staff, or suggest future agenda items. Do any of my colleagues on the committees have any comments?
Yes.
Go ahead, Ms. Roden.
I'd like to request, if at all possible, if we could get the agenda maybe a week and a half to maybe 2 weeks before the meeting to allow us enough time to review all of the information and the attachments. Thank you.
Any others? Thank you for that. All right, we will now move on to the agenda items for today. Madam Clerk, will you please read the first item?
Yes, item one is to approve the minutes of the November 13th, 2025 regular meeting.
First, second, thank you, members Willie for the first and Atwater for the second. All in favor of the motion to approve, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, I would say that is approved. And thank you. And the next item is item number two.
Yes, item two is information related to the annual Form 700 filings due on April 1st, 2026. And I am the filing officer for the IOC-AOC. The annual filing notification emails are in the process of being sent out, so you may have already received your notification or you will receive it soon. This is just a reminder since our next meeting is after the filing deadline. And just remember that similar to taxes, when filing, you're disclosing your sources of income for the previous calendar year. You can file online electronically at the link provided in the agenda packet, or you can fill out and print the hard copy form and submit it to clerk of the board's office. If you hold more than one position that requires a Form 700, you do not need to file multiple times. You can file one Form 700 that includes an attached list of all the positions you hold and filing with the broadest disclosure category required of the positions that you hold. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me. And that concludes my reminder to the members.
Excellent. The next item on the agenda is the Investment Oversight Committee matters, and I'll ask the clerk to read item number three.
Item three is to receive and file quarterly report on the county treasury and investments for quarter ended December 31st, 2025. And we have Dana Schultz, Chief Investment Officer, to present this report.
Good morning, committee members. Dana Schultz, Chief Investment Officer. Okay, we'll start with the report of Treasury of Investments for the Investment Oversight Committee. This is the same slideshow that you guys saw at the last presentation. Our balance for this quarter is approximately $17.5 billion. Last IOC meeting, it was $14.5 billion. So it's obviously increased significantly due to the property tax income that was coming in for first installment in December. Year-to-date earnings are $312 million. Our gross yield is 4.02%. And our year-end estimate right now for the pool earnings is 3.5%, which is aligned with the FOMC's target rate. All of these investments were under the 2025 IP that was approved on February 11th, 2025. This is our chart of investment policy limits. Nothing has changed since the last meeting. On the compliance summary, it's a little I didn't click it good enough. There we go. It's a little bit different from last month. What the team did is separate out some of the items, specifically the quarterly compliance monitoring and the annual compliance monitoring, to separate between the duties between CEO and the Treasurer Tax Collector's Office. As you'll see on item number 4, the September 30th, 2024 and December 31st, 2024 reports for compliance were completed in January, and we'll discuss those on item number 4. Under the CEO's office, the March 31st, 2025 was received and filed at the last meeting, but it's now reflected on this chart here. And the June 30th, 2025 will be received and filed at the next IOC meeting. For the CEO, the annual compliance report for the period ending June 30th, 2025 is pending. They need to complete first the audit regarding June 30th, 2024 before they start working on that. All the AC items will be covered by the auditor controller, and the IP that we reviewed last IOC meeting was taken to the board, included in the strategic financial plan, and approved on December 16th, 2025, and went into effect January 1st, 2026. On this table, there's no changing to the reporting methods. We just updated the data. Quarter over quarter, we do have higher balances, again, due to the influx of property taxes. Our year over year is declining due to falling interest rates, and the weighted average maturity is increasing as we purchase longer maturities due to the interest rate environment. The next slide you're familiar with, this is the Orange County investments. It includes our top 10 participants. I'm going to go through this quickly unless anybody has questions. And then the next slide is the same for the schools. On economics, regarding employment and labor market, job growth slowed during the quarters, with the average of the economy losing about 22,000 jobs per month. It's a noticeable slowdown compared to earlier in the year. National employment rate held steady at 4.4%, indicating a cooling but still stable job market. California and Orange County performed better than the national trend, go Orange County, with Orange County's employment rate dropping to 3.9%, driven by job gains in healthcare and education and transportation-related industries. Inflation continues to ease compared to the previous quarter. Consumer prices are still rising, but at a slower pace than earlier in the year, but inflation remains slightly above the Federal Reserve's target rate of 2%, which keeps policymakers cautious in interest rates, the yield curve remained inverted for short-term maturities, signaling a slower economic momentum ahead. Markets expect short-term interest rates to decline through 2026 as the Federal Reserve responds to slower job growth. Longer-term rates have returned to more normal levels, and the economy showed strong growth earlier in the year. Our real GDP, and a lot of these you'll see these tables later in the presentation. I'm not going to go into detail in each table, so this is just the economic overview. But the GDP grew at a solid pace, driven by consumer spending, exports, and government spending. The housing market, Orange County home prices declined slightly toward the end of the year, which is consistent with our statewide trends. Looking ahead, we're expecting mortgage rates to fall for 2026, and the lower rate should help support modest growth in home sales and prices. The Federal Reserve during this quarter cut 50 basis points. They did 25 basis point cut on October 19th, 2025, and another 25 basis points cut on December 10th, 2025. So their current target rate range for interest is 3.5% to 3.75%. Financial markets expect additional rate cuts in 2026 with as economic growth and employment continue to cool. So key takeaways, overall, the economy is slowing but remains stable. Inflation is easing. The job market is cooling and interest rates are expected to move lower. Locally, Orange County, though, continues to perform relatively well compared to broader state and national trends. These are the charts I referenced earlier that go over the employment information in more detail, inflation, yield curve, gross domestic product, and median home price. Do we have any questions regarding our investment portfolio reports? No. Good. Thank you. Easy. Next one, item agenda number 4, which is receive and file for compliance monitoring of investment portfolio for quarters ended September 30th, 2024 and December 31st, 2024. I referenced those earlier on the compliance page. Both of those are completed with no discrepancies. We had clean reports issued on both of those quarters. There's no questions. Thank you very much.
All right, I think I see we have a question. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Chair Johnson. I did want to identify that this item is the responsibility of the treasurer tax collector. And the last agenda item here, agenda item number 4, I would ask that the agenda identify the speaker with the department they're affiliated with. Ms. Schultz is no longer with the Office of the Treasurer Tax Collector. So I think all the rest of the agenda items identify the separation of duties between the governing board, which is the authority for investing. And I did want to note the delay in the 2 agenda items that the report was issued on January 15th, but they were back from 2024, and that delay had been previously directed to Brown Armstrong to do later audits earlier than these 2, but they are completed now. I want to thank the team. There were no compliance findings, and I do appreciate all their support in the time when I was over the investing. Thank you very much, Chair.
Excellent. Thank you for that. Do we have any other comments? Go ahead, Supervisor.
So I just want to ask, because we're trying to do the work here, we don't want to get involved in your political issues. So if we could not have that be part of this meeting, I would appreciate that. Ms. Aguirre, could you share with the board, Ms. Schultz is still continuing to do the work that she's assigned to do, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So can you explain that to us a little better? Because we understand there was a kerfuffle, and probably our committee should have a clear understanding of what the duties are now and what the duties were before.
Well, currently, Dana is the county's chief investment officer. As I believe everybody's aware, the investment authority ultimately lies with the board. They did not delegate that authority, so it now falls under the CEO. Dana's a direct report to me and is responsible for the investments. The staff that are currently located within the Treasurer Tax Collector's Office that have 100% of their duties are investment related, and then those staff that have a role related to the investments, they report to Dana still, as she's the one that's responsible for the investments under me and the board's authority.
Thank you for the clarification, because you know we just didn't know.
Excellent. Are there any other questions or comments? All right. Seeing none, that I believe that after that item, that concludes the Investment Oversight Committee matters. We'll take just a brief pause before diving into the audit committee oversight items. Dr. Bean, you're more than welcome to stay, but your presence is not required.
Oh, so generous, thanks.
Very good. Why don't we take a quick 5-minute break, which will bring us back at 10:52. I'm fine if we don't need a break. That was a pretty quick first part. You know what? Let's just go ahead and dive through it and try to save everyone's calendar for today.
Okay, we can go ahead.
All right, so we are now back to order at 10:48 after that 1 minute break. This begins the Audit Oversight Committee items. Madam Clerk, will you please read item number 5 for us?
Item 5 is to receive and file a report on the required communication from external auditors, and we have David Showalter of Eide Bailey to present this item.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Walter. Committee members, other members here that are here, are presenting the results of the.
Closer to that mic.
Yeah, I don't know if it's on. Is it on? Okay.
To be close.
Here we go. All right. Thank you.
We're here to present the results of the 2025 audit of the county's financial statements. In your handout, you should have a few attachments.
The first one I'll go through is an outline of the projects as of December 31st, 2025, where we stand with the overall audit plan for the county. So if you recall our previous meetings where we discussed the audit plan for conducting an audit of the county's annual comprehensive financial report. In addition, we audit the standalone reports for the John Wayne Airport and the Orange County Waste and Recycling standalone financial statements. So those items that are listed on the project and timelines sheet. As attachment A, we have completed the county's audit of their annual financial statements. That report was issued on December 18th, 2025. We also issued the auditor's reports for JWA and OCWR at the same time. So those audits are completed. I do have a required communications letter that I'll go through at the conclusion of going through the timeline. The other audits that we're also completing is the county's audit of their federal wards or their single audit. So we're currently in progress of completing that audit with a due date of March 31st, 2026. We just completed also the audit of the schedule of assets held in the county treasury. So that audit was issued and released on so that's completed. So the only remaining items we have are the single audit. There's an agreed upon procedures over the tobacco settlement funds, as well as the HUD section. The HUD. So all of those should be wrapped up
by March 31st.
Okay. And then part of your package is our required communications letter. So at the conclusion of the audit, we have a responsibility to provide required communications to those charged with governance, including the audit committee and the board of supervisors. So this letter that you have in your packet is what we provide in addition to the opinion on the financial statements, which is included within the financial statements of the county. We provide this separate letter. And this separate letter is just providing an overview of the results of the audit and various things that as we work through the audit, there are certain requirements that we communicate in the audit. So just to clarify that we did issue the audit opinions on December 18th, 2025, which was in accordance with the timelines that are set forth in our engagement letter. Going through the letter, we've met all compliance and all ethical requirements regarding independence. Why is that important? Because we are independent of the county. So in order for us to render an opinion on your financial statements, independent of the county. So that includes, you know, us not participating in any way with the county. with respect to management-related decisions. So that's one of the most important parts of the financial statement audit is that we're independent of the county. The county contracts with us, Hyde Bailey, to conduct an audit of its financial statements, and our role is to issue and render an opinion on its fair presentation. So with respect to the opinion on the audit audited financial statements, the opinion is an unmodified opinion. So we did render an unmodified or a clean opinion on those financial statements. For this particular year, there was an implementation of a pronouncement, which was GASB, Governmental Accounting Standards Board 101. This dealt with compensated absences, and the GASB decided that it was time to go back and revise how compensated absences are calculated and computed. So that did result in an adjustment to the balance of the financial statements. So we have, this is a matter in our audit opinion that talks through that and references the reader to the necessary footnotes in the financial statements to talk more about what that impact had on the financial statements. You know, as part of any audit and preparation of the financial statements, there are estimates that go into the financial statements. More significant estimates that we've identified in the audit pertain primarily to the county's pension and OPEB liability estimates, as well as landfill liabilities, which are remediation liabilities, as well as risk management liabilities. Those liabilities are significant primarily because of the materiality statements that are significant balances, primarily liabilities. And in most of those cases, the county is hiring a third-party vendor, let's say an actuary, to assist in preparing those estimates. So our role as the auditor is to get an understanding of how those estimates were developed, make sure we have an understanding of the specialists that were hired in order to assist the county, in order to ensure that those estimates are fairly stated in all material respects. And the significant financial statement disclosures that go with those particular estimates, we've identified as significant, again, primarily because of the sensitivity of those estimates, especially with your pension and OPEB. The GASB has provided some sensitivity schedules that go into the footnotes that sort of pro forma, if the discount rates for some of those liabilities were to go up or down by 1%, it would certainly have a significant effect on the county's financial statements. So we've outlined those as significant disclosures. We're happy to report that as part of our audit, we did not have any uncorrected or corrected misstatements on the audit. So we're happy to say that and present that to you. So that's great work on the audit controller and their team to prepare the financial statements, as well as, of course, it's a good reflection on the county as a whole that there weren't any audit adjustments. We had no disagreements with management in the course of the audit. As I mentioned earlier, we did have a modification to the opinion, primarily to make reference to the fact that there was an implementation of a new accounting pronouncement. And so anytime you have that implementation of a new accounting pronouncement that might impact consistency and comparability of the financial statements, we put an emphasis on matter in our opinion, just to draw the reader to understand why there's some variances there. Management took responsibility for those financial statements on December 18th by signing the management representation letter. And as far as we know, management did not consult any other accountants or auditors with respect to any technical matters on the audit. All of those consultations came directly to us as part of the audit engagement. So with that, and just to give you a brief update on the treasurer's report, the statement of our schedule of assets held in the county treasurer, as I mentioned, we just released that report on February 4th, and that report also has a clean opinion or unmodified opinion as well. So I want to thank the county for all of their effort with this year's audit. I'm very thankful that we were able to get everything done timely for you. And that I'll open it up for any questions that you might have.
Excellent, thank you. Does anyone have any questions? I do have one question slash comment. So on the accounting policy change, that was when those type of changes happen, it's not because we were doing anything wrong before.
That's right.
Yeah. It was purely we were adjusting to an updated standard.
Right.
And so is that
that's a great question, Tim. So the accounting guidance, and there was actually some new accounting standards that were implemented a couple of years ago, GASB 100, that provided some clarification on when we adopt new accounting standards, that's a change in accounting principle. And so the accounting standards does require that we basically implement that change as of the beginning of the year. So that means we restate the beginning balances to basically place that standard in effect as of the beginning of the year. So that's not considered an error. That's just considered an adoption of accounting pronouncement, and you're following what the pronouncements require is restating the beginning balances for that.
Yeah. Excellent. This is totally normal.
That's totally normal. Okay. Yeah. So
I just want to make make sure.
And because of GASB's activity over the last 10 years, there's been a lot of restatements of financial statements lately, just because of all the new accounting pronouncements. So it's becoming to be more standard in the sense of seeing restated financial statements, but it's not because of error. It's because of implementation of an accounting pronouncement. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, I think that, unless there's any other comments, I think we're done with this one. And Madam Clerk, if you could read item number 6, that would be great.
Item 6 is to approve Internal Audit Department quarterly status report, including performance audits, and approve executive summary of internal audit reports for quarter ended December 31st, 2025. And we have Jose Olivo, Deputy Director of Internal Audit Department, to present this item.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Agenda item 6 is our report on internal audit activity for the quarter ending December 31st, 2025. And I will report on the audit reports we issued during the quarter and provide a brief status on the forensic audit. This quarter, we issued 4 final follow-up reports and 2 draft reports. If you have the handouts on page 2 and 3, that lists the follow-up reports we issued. For 3 of these, departments fully implemented all recommendations, so we will close out those audits. The other follow-up was a follow-up of HCA cash receipts, and we noted HCA fully implemented 8 of the 10 recommendations we made, and 2 recommendations remain outstanding. Those recommendations are related to significant control weaknesses we noted. However, HCA is in the process of implementing those recommendations, and we will be conducting a second follow-up and reporting back to your committee on the status of that in approximately 6 months. Page 4 lists the draft reports we issued during this quarter. This was a DA cybersecurity audit and a first follow-up at the treasurer tax collector's cash receipts. And we have since completed these reviews. We've finalized the reports, and they will be reported as final in the next quarter. So that's the summary of the audit reports we issued. We also wanted to mention we will be discussing performance audits as part of this status. However, at this time, we don't have any started yet. We've been working with the CPO to establish contracts with a list of audit firms for these types of services. However, we recently experienced some delays due to a State Assembly Bill, AB 339, which requires us to, it went into effect in January and requires us to go to the labor unions with any services we plan to outsource. And we need to give them 45-day notice for them to review and respond to our outsourcing plan. And obviously, that impacts how nimble we are in the ability to contract out for audit services. But we're working closely with CPO to establish these agreements and to best address this 45-day requirement. And we'll keep the committee posted on that. And finally, a brief status on the forensic audit. Weaver and Tidwell are on track to issue their final report for phase 1. By the end of this month, and we will, upon issuing the report, we'll work with the board to provide a status and to also schedule their presentation at a future board meeting. And that concludes my presentation. If you have any questions, I can take that.
Let's start here to my left.
Thank you. So on the AB 339, if the so the bargaining groups that this would be notified to would be OCEA. Is there any others?
We collaborated last time when we had to contract some audits with HRS, and they handled that piece of it, Michelle. I think it was OCEA and maybe OCMA also.
OCMA, if there's any managers.
I believe it's those two, but we can report back if not. But
okay. Anyway, so the reason I'm asking is it's a 45-day notice period, but there's nothing that stops those two groups from responding in less than 45 days. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. So do we know if they have responded?
I would imagine if they had responded, you would have heard and they would have been moving on it, but we can definitely check on that. But we know that that 45-day period, we weren't going to be able to issue any RFPs, most likely right until the middle of February.
Okay. So maybe we can follow up because this is a kind of a one-time thing with all the volume of audits that we right now have that we don't normally have because of the corruption issue. So if we could follow up with them to see if they're okay, and maybe it's just sitting on someone's desk.
Yeah. Okay. I've been working closely with CPO. We'll certainly follow up with CPO to see where they're at with that.
Seeing if she can check with Maria right now, Vice Chair, to see if she's got a status.
Yeah. Okay.
We're also trying to strategize because, you know, we have our audit plan and there's several audits we like to call. Can't we do the 45-day notice now? And they've been telling us, no, it's actually when you get to each contract. So as Jose mentioned, this isn't going to be a very nimble option for us to be able to outsource things. So it's real. We learned about this at the beginning of the year. We're still trying to, you know, navigate through the, but we're going to try to make this as efficient and effective for us, because it doesn't do us any good to have to wait every time we're trying to, you know, contract.
Right. So I tend to be someone who thinks we should do things in-house. However, there are occasions when we're trying to maybe do more volume or have a unique situation.
Sure.
Where we might need to. So, and it seems to me that this is the kind of situation we shouldn't be doing by email or, you know, we should have a meeting and sit down and come to an agreement on the 45-day period for the other contracts. Maybe there's just a stipulation that we could enter into with the bargaining groups in a collaborative way.
Yeah, sure. We'll set up a meeting with Michelle.
Awareness, we are looking at, rather than it being on a case-by-case, contract-by-contract basis, we do a look ahead, and then we provide them. It can't be too far ahead, but could it be monthly, quarterly, right, so that we don't have those delays.
And Michelle, this is impacting all the county's contracts.
Oh, yes, all across.
Well, and I understand why, and I don't have a concern about that necessarily for the future. It's just we happen to be trying to get a lot of audits done, an unusual amount of audits done in a short period of time.
Thank you.
Ms. Rowan.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I just wanted to provide some additional follow-up on the cash receipts audit that was noted. We want to thank internal audit for their patience. The audit was done back in 2024, and we've just issued the first follow-up, the first 6 months. Couple of items. We have been in a hiring freeze, and several of the findings were implemented, but a couple of the key ones related to policies and procedures, and our policies and procedures position in our administrative services division has not been filled. It is frozen currently, so we are hoping to get the policies for this high-risk cash receipts completed by March, but we are actively working with our budget team to see if we can submit and have these positions unfrozen, because it is affecting the ability of us and my team to be able to timely get those procedures approved into our policy manual and approved. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention, because it will come back at the next, that it did have several open findings and it's been out there for quite a while. So I wanted just to provide some additional color, and I appreciate internal audit support on that. And of course, my team is working as hard as they can to get those done along with the day-to-day duties. Thank you.
Excellent. And Member Roden, I think you had a comment?
Yes. On the Dana Point Harbor Audit 2408, you don't have a status on the report, whether it's in process or completed. And I think yesterday we got the report saying that it was done. So do this need to reflect that before we approve the...
This is as of a point in time, so we issued that report subsequent to the issuance of this, but you're right, it is now completed. It should show in process on this schedule, but now subsequent to the closure of the December 31st quarterly period, we've now issued it, and we'll talk about it at our next quarterly meeting.
Thank you.
And do we have any other comments before we would entertain? All right, hearing no comments, I'll entertain a motion, please.
I'll move.
All right, and let's share that. And all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. And Madam Clerk, if we could move on to item number 6, that'd be great.
Item 7 is to approve external audit activity quarterly status report for quarter ended December 31st, 2025, and receive and file report on the status of external audit recommendations implementation. And we have Aggie Alonso, Internal Audit Director, to present this item.
Thank you. Yes, on a quarterly basis, internal audit reports to the AOC all of the external audit activity throughout the county. So they're aware of any material significant issues and to ensure that appropriate corrective action is taken. For this last period ending December 31st, 2025, county departments reported 17 completed external audits. Of those, 7 significant issues were identified, 3 of which included material disallowances of over 100,000. 2 of those out of the 3 with the material disallowances, 2 of those were audits by the state controller. One of them had to do with HCA Proposition 47, Safe Neighborhoods. And for that one, they disallowed $650,000 in provider and related indirect costs as a result of the not adequately supporting the expenses that were made by the subcontractor and a lack of sufficient financial records. The second state controller audit was of Sheriff's Department Racial and Identity Profiling Program. And for this audit, they disallowed $450,000 in costs that were unsupported or ineligible for the program. And lastly, the third audit reported with material issues had to do with HCA's short Doyle Medi-Cal cost report. And as our Madam CFO correctly pointed out at our last meeting, this is really a true-up, you know, what was actually how much funding was actually provided and how much the true costs were. And as a result of the reconciliation, HCA owes the state a total of about $7.5 million, and HCA is waiting for the state to invoice them to then repay them the cost. In terms of prior significant findings, nothing to report in terms of delays or anything that's not on track. So that said, that concludes my report for external audit activity.
Do you also want to do the, should we take the vote on this one and then the receive and file? Because we have a receive and file also. Is that right?
I think that was.
This vote, okay.
I have a question.
I move.
We have a question first.
So as it relates to the $650,000 on the Prop 47 Safe Neighborhoods and Schools grant expenditures, have we corrected the protocols, procedures, or the errors that caused us to not, I guess, enforce the nonprofit that was implementing these programs?
Yeah, thank you for that question. We do have representatives from HCA that should be able to answer these questions. Juan, did you want to take the lead? Sorry. Thank you.
You got to push the button.
There we go. Morning, everyone. Committee. Juan Corral, County Procurement Office, formerly of Healthcare Agency. So, Supervisor Foley, we did have four corrective actions that were that took place or that were implemented to address the concerns or the deficiencies. One was related to actual cost contracts. We updated our annual site visit monitoring tool and procedure to require contract administrators to select 1 month of expenses and review the detailed backup documentation to verify the costs are appropriate and justified, with detailed receipts matching the general ledger of expenses charged to the county. So that was one of the implementations or corrective actions.
Okay, can you put that in regular speak? What does that mean?
Absolutely. So part of the county's contract monitoring activities include a on-site visit where the program or the services are provided. So what we are doing now is part of the report that we complete, we pull 1 month of expenses and do a spot check to ensure that what we're being billed for is indeed backed up by the documents or the receipts that are being kept at the on-site.
So that was one of the issues that was identified, that they didn't have backup receipts?
Correct.
Okay.
And then the next corrective action that was taken was related to fee-for-service contracts. Very similar, updated the annual site visit monitoring tool and procedure to include a review of 1 month billed units and to verify supporting documentation is maintained by the contractor. So the difference here being that for fee-for-service contracts, we essentially pay the vendors or the contractor based on the units of service that are provided. And then the third corrective action was enhanced contract monitoring tool, which is our expenditure and revenue report, to add formula to calculate the indirect rate percentage to ensure visibility on allowable indirect rate per the contract and be consistent throughout the monitoring activities to stay within the allowable percentage. So basically what this is.
What does that mean? You knew I was going to ask.
Yes. So we use a reporting tool called the expenditure and revenue report. So we've enhanced it to where now there's a formula implemented that will essentially trigger a notification when the cost submitted, the indirect cost submitted for that particular month go above the approved indirect cost rate.
So if we have a 10% formula, then if it hits 11%, you get a notice?
Correct.
Okay.
And then that way it triggers us going back to the contractor and saying, you know, per the contract, we are not allowed to pay above the 10%.
Okay, well, that's good because that will address, and we're going to implement this across the board, not
yes.
just with this. Okay,
absolutely.
Because that will address some issues we recently had with some of our contracts. Okay.
And then last but not least, we also implemented an invoice review process that includes the contract administrator as well as the program manager to review the invoices as well as acknowledge receiving services prior to the submittal of the invoices to accounts payable for accounting, audit, and invoice of payment processing. So this adds another layer of review before we pass it on to our accounting folks for a final review and then payment processing.
Okay, so this is all through one organization, Charitable Ventures. Was it for a particular program that we identified that there was this $650,000?
Yes. So they were the fiscal sponsors for Project Kinship. So
okay.
They were essentially functioning as that part of the providing that service for the organization.
Okay. And was this through the Juvenile Justice Coordinating Council grant or a different one? Because I think that's a Prop 47.
It was Prop 47.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a lot of money.
All right, excellent for that. Does anyone else have any questions or comments? If not, this is, we need to take a vote for approval of this item. So I would entertain a motion.
So moved.
Thank you.
And a second.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Willie and second to Ms. Roden. All in favor, say aye. Opposed and motion carries. moves along to item number 8, please.
Thank you, Chair Johnson.
Item 8 is to approve the independent risk assessment and recommendations for fiscal year 2025-26 and fiscal year 2026-27 audit plans. And we have Kyle O'Rourke from consulting partner with Macias, Ginny, and O'Connell to present this item.
Before Kyle begins, I just want to remind again, this new action was given on June 24, 2025 by the board for internal audit to contract with an independent CPA firm to look at our 2526 audit plan, approved audit plan, and to make recommendations to that plan, and then also to develop our fiscal year 2627 audit plan. We hired MGO to perform the risk assessment and audit plan, and we agree with the results of their risk assessment and audit plan, and we thank and acknowledge all their hard work in doing this assignment. And with that being said, I'd like to turn it over to the partner for MGO, Kyle O'Rourke.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Kyle O'Rourke. I'm a partner with MGO, and I lead a lot of our risk and internal audit consulting work for state and local governments like the County of Orange. You may be familiar with a partner of mine, Linda Hurley. She was a significant participant in this as well, and I know she's been working with the county for many, many years. So she wanted to make sure that we made note that she was a significant participant, but unfortunately wasn't able to come today. There's sort of two components to our work, and you'll see that as we go through the presentation and in the report. This is going to be a relatively quick presentation. I'm open to questions, but I just want to make note that we're going to first talk about the risk assessment aspect of our work and the work we did there. And then ultimately, the second component of our work is how do we take that information and what's ultimately the recommended internal audit plan. Before we dive into risk, I always want to provide the caveat. Risk does not mean something went wrong. It does not mean there's internal control gaps or compliance issues. It just means that there's inherent risk. Something could hypothetically go wrong. And of course, we want to make sure that we're evaluating where and when internal audit can add value and ensure that the county has appropriate protections in place, speaking broadly, to avoid those things from going wrong in the future. That's the hypothetical goal. But just want to make note of that. Where we talk about risk, that doesn't mean something is wrong. It means that there is inherent risk to consider for audit planning purposes. So diving into the risk assessment, I wanted to first talk about what we did. And so on the left-hand side of the slide, there's two kind of buckets. But the first thing we did, of course, is get familiar with the county. We have familiarity, but of course, we dive in and do research into various aspects like the budget and publicly available information that the county makes available, as well as news articles and other external documents. Then the second and third items that we sort of completed in this case include a survey. We invited over 1,400 participants and had over 350 respondents, so a very significant number of respondents and a higher than, I would say, expected response with the quick timeline that we had, so that was great. We also conducted a number of interviews, which included some of the folks seated at the table here today amongst a couple of dozen others throughout the county, and gleaned a lot of great information from that. And all of that information culminated into a few different pieces of our risk assessment, as you'll see in the report. But ultimately, if you look at pages 6 and 7, you'll see representation of sort of the more detailed risk areas under consideration. And if you look at page 17, you'll see sort of the culmination of the risk rankings, which are housed on the right-hand slide here. It's very high-level categorical, I know, but page 6 and 7 gets in a little bit more into the weeds, and then, of course, the audit plan does as well. Okay, so diving into the recommendations of the audit plan. Mr. Alonzo made note of the fact that we were making recommendations that were oriented around the second half of this current fiscal year as well as next fiscal year. So for FY 25 and 26, we largely concurred with the audits that were on the audit plan. We made recommendation of adding a couple that you see here. A part of our consideration is we're 7 months at this point into the fiscal year, so we can't recommend a whole rewrite. But ultimately, we have some recommendations for this current fiscal year and are in agreement, as you'll see in the report, with many of the other audits that were identified. With FY 26 and FY 27, I'm going to get into that more on the next slide, but what I'll make note of is what you'll largely see is we've categorized the audits slightly differently than you might have previously seen in audit plans. And we're including, for example, the performance audit program that Mr. Alonzo mentioned earlier, some IT audits, construction audits, and some risk assessment, additional risk assessments beyond this sort of planning exercise. So additional categories you might not have seen previously, but we'll get into those. And then lastly, at the conclusion of the report, you see the horizon. We wanted to make note that, you know, not every audit can end up in an audit plan. There are high risks, moderate risks, emerging risks that may or may not be of consideration today, but also in the future. And that's sort of what that list is intended to represent. Things that are of consideration, of course, but didn't quite fit within the plan that's being recommended. Okay. So I want to talk about kind of four categories of things that stood out to me in conducting this. I'm not going to go through every project, but I want to call attention to four because I think they're emerging and important topics. First, in that first bullet, we talk about the recommendation to conduct two risk assessments, the first of which is oriented around fraud. Fraud is an important topic. It's obviously in the news. That's not why we're recommending it. But of course, we want to make note of the fact that we're diving into potential fraud risks and evaluating internal controls where and when necessary. So the fraud risk assessment, rather, would point to areas that warrant additional consideration. Additionally, we have some recommendations around federal and state grant compliance risk assessment. Of course, there's significant scrutiny around federal and state grants currently. We want to make sure the county is adequately protected. This risk assessment would be intended to identify whether or not there's any gaps in monitoring or auditing that's ongoing and potentially recommend additional auditing or monitoring in the future, again, around grant compliance matters. I make note of cycle audits. It's maybe sort of a rebranded category of what you've seen previously, but this is really where we're diving into internal controls and compliance matters, and we're looking at your typical business functions and business cycles. I include a list of examples in the report, but for example, investment management is included. It's a significant account on your balance sheet, your investments are, that is. We want to periodically take a look at that. The various investment programs, the compliance with state and local law, for example, could be a consideration. That's just one business cycle, of course. There's a number that we would suggest you sort of rotate to over a multi-year period. And then lastly, we did add some work around, or recommend rather, some work around construction audit or the capital program. The county has many projects. If I'm recollecting correctly, roughly $1 billion in projected capital spend this current fiscal year. So, of course, it's very significant. And where and when there's large projects, again, that do not have the appropriate monitoring or auditing mechanisms in place, we're recommending consideration of some construction audit work. So those are four areas that certainly were not in the prior audit plan that I wanted to make mention. But, of course, there's an audit plan before you today for consideration. And I want to take the next few minutes to answer any questions that you might have.
All right, excellent. Thank you for that. Do we have any comments or questions? Go ahead.
So it appears that you made some recommendations that I gather will follow and change your audit plan because of those. And, we hadn't looked at our risk assessment process in a number of years, and so we appreciate you doing that. Wanted to know, on a go-forward basis, what are going to be our recommendations? And Aggie, you can probably get into this as well. How do we change our risk assessment process in the future? Do we hire an outside place every year, or do we do it internally? And I'm just wondering, you know, what our thoughts are in that area, you know, on the go forward.
Long term, we would like to handle this ourselves like we have in the past. With the addition of performance audit, and like you said, we hadn't had someone from the outside look at it in quite a while. I thought this was great, made a lot of sense. MGO was nice too to provide some recommendations moving forward on risk assessments that I think Kyle talked about that we should look at and see what else we can possibly review it. Even in 26, 27, we can always change things around. And to answer your question, you know, this has been a good learning process working with MGO and everyone else. Eventually, we're going to want to do this ourselves. We have a roadmap. We know county. We know the controls. And now we have performance audit. Although, you know, certainly contracting it out, provides, you know, an outside look too. So, you know, that's certainly that.
So at this point, our next one will come up in the June.
Yeah, so this now covers the rest of 25, 26, and 26, 27. Of course, every quarter we come up with
we'll approve a new plan. Is it the 27,
28? It will be the next plan that comes before.
And it'll be later on this year, right?
It'll be. We'll start putting that one together next year, early next year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that'll.
Now, if it's approved today, it'll go before the board at the last Tuesday meeting in March.
Right, but if we're gonna do this outside again, we should probably kind of have a plan for that, or whether we're gonna begin to do it internally. And I think that's a decision we need to decide what we think we should recommend to the board. And I'd love some comments from Supervisor Foley as well as Andrew and the CEO, since they were pivotal in making us, you know, in this process.
Go ahead. Sure. My initial thought is that I appreciate the work that MGO did, and I think it's always good to have a new set of eyes looking at us. We also have the ability to do it in-house, though. And with our current, I would say, budget situation, right, and I know you're going to give a staffing update, Aggie, probably not going to be getting any new resources, right? So we may see some of the audits carried over, but my thought was maybe every 5 years we contract for that service and just have somebody else take a second look at it for us, because sometimes there's just things that we're not aware of, right? Sometimes we just get too close to things. And but I think on, you know, just like for next year, 27, 28, I think we're probably fine doing that in-house.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
That was actually going to be my recommendation, some kind of periodic, you know, review, 5 years, whatever it is, to just have that outside look. I think I really appreciated, you know, this report. I think there's a lot of great areas that we can pivot to in the future. So,
and I would concur with those comments, because what we have here is, this is sort of an assessment of what we're doing and what we need to do. And as Aggie mentioned, it's like the roadmap that we now need to move forward on. So I don't think we need to contract that out every year, but having a periodic review of what we're doing, are we meeting the expectations of the roadmap, of the controls, I think that would be helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a great plan. I would also, you know, especially when you're mentioning, you know, emerging risks and emerging topics, you know, those that we keep our, especially during that time, that future time period, those emerging risks will eventually turn into, you know, today's risks. And so, you know, keep an eye on those items, especially. All right. So this is a vote item, and so I'd entertain a motion for this item number 8.
Move.
Thank you.
Second.
Excellent. All in favor, say aye. All right. And any opposed? And motion moves. And so next item number 9, please.
Item 9 is to receive update on internal audit staffing and resources, and we have Aggie Alonso, Internal Audit Director, to present this item.
Thank you, everyone. And Michelle, just for the record, this item was requested by Mark Willie at the last meeting. I didn't request this.
<I'm
sorry>. And I understand the current budget situation. But before I begin, a little bit of positive news, also negative, because it's going to put us in a bad situation. But I just want to acknowledge a longtime employee of ours that has been with our department for 30 years. We affectionately call him the Dean of Auditing. His name is Michael J. Dean, and he's going to be retiring on March 19th. Thank you for all his excellent work, and wish him nothing but success and fun and retirement. So thank you, Mike, for
thank you,
all your years of service, and we're going to miss you. So now let's get into our staffing and resources. We have some vacancies. No, so currently our department's budgeted 15 items, including myself. And that includes 13 people in operations, including myself, my director, and then the two people we have in admin. Just to give you an idea of where we're at right now, a small department, any vacancy really hurts because obviously we're small, but long story short, for this fiscal year, we're down already approximately 3,000 hours. Those are hours that we thought we'd have available in our audit plan, which we will no longer have. And there's a few reasons for that. You know, we had some one person's retiring. We had one person that didn't really work out, and we had a vacancy in that position. And then we had a couple of maternity leaves also that, you know, obviously have impacted us. But you know, those, like I said, any vacancy, any amount of time really, really kind of, you know, handcuffs us as a small department. So we're looking at 3,000 hours less already for this fiscal year. MGO's audit plan for 26, 27 is actually built on us having 4,750 more hours. So even that's built on more capacity, which again, like you said, Michelle, I'll have to work with you and might have to carry some audits forward, whatever. But we're definitely, you know, like the rest of the county, you know, we're short staff and don't have enough resources to do everything. What are we doing about it? In our strategic plan for 26, 27, we included a request for a manager and a senior auditor. We're going to continue to work with the CEO to see what we can do, but we do understand the current budget limitations. The effect on us not having all the staffing is we won't be able to get to all the audits in our plan, and then obviously we keep carrying forward, and you know, it's not allowing us to look at all the high risk areas as timely as we'd like, which has been the issue. So that's my report on the current state of internal audit staffing and resources. I'll turn it over to whoever.
Any questions? Yes, Mr.
Can you start now in putting in to fill his position?
We have to go through an unfreeze process. Yeah.
Tried to help.
So, can I ask a question? How many actual vacancies do you have in your department? If we count Mr. Dean. Okay.
Mr. Dean.
All right. So I guess my question then is, we've given basically over the last 12 months, you've received performance audits as part of your department. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then you've received some specialized audits, forensic audits from the board that weren't there on a normalized basis. And so clearly we only have so many hours, and we've just done a risk assessment. So there is going to be, I would gather between those new duties, there are less audits that we're going to perform in the next fiscal year. And probably because it's pretty clear that it takes almost 6 months to hire somebody here in the county. You know, by the time you start and get to where you need to get to. So this will have a lag effect. What are we going, you know, what are you not going to do? And I think we just need to be clear about that with us and with the board, that with the resources that you're given, that there are some things that will have to drop out of the apple cart. And so, I think we need to start to identify what are the things that are going to drop out of the apple cart, and then actively as opposed to passively approve those dropouts.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, thank you, Chair. So internal audit has like your base level of work, right? So your staff for that base level. Then when there's special requests and then like with the performance audits, the funding was provided for the performance audits, but it's contract work. Eventually we thought that might be right transitioned at the right time, and there could be the addition of staff, but now is not the right time for that. So we do contract for those above and beyond, those one-time audits. When looking at which audits might be delayed, I think we tend to be optimistic in the amount of work, right, in the audits that can be completed, right, Mark? We've been, I would say, doing this for a long time. And then it's obviously going to be based on risk. I think it's too early at this point to do that. The department's budgets are due March 2nd, and we'll be working with departments March, April timeframe related to the budget. And so we'll need to update our revenue projections and our cost projections, see what departments submit. So we'll have a better idea at our next meeting. And I don't want to speak for you, Aggie, but that was, you know, my initial thought on that. Thank you.
And then we lose you too. We lose this brain trust here sometime this year, right?
My contract expires June 30th.
All right. And so, you know, there's some of this that, you know, when you have people that haven't been in this room before, it's a, you know, you got to bring people up to speed and so forth. And I agree with you. I guess what I'm suggesting is we know it's an issue. And, you know, even though they're not doing the performance audits, the management of the performance audit takes some time because you used to do that. Of course, you work 300 hours a week. I don't know what the deal is. But I think that we should keep something like this on the agenda so we're sure that we're addressing it and looking at it would be my thought process. Not to tell you what needs to be there, but I think it's clear that it's an issue and one that we should keep on there until we feel like we've come to a conclusion, Mr. Chairman. That would, of course, be up to you.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'm fine keeping this on an ongoing basis. So I'm going to go to Vice Chair, and then I think Aggie has a comment.
Okay, so I just wanted to follow up on Director Rowden's comment, because if the retirement position is in the budget right now for the fiscal year 25-26, why would he lose that position? Seems like he wouldn't lose that position.
He may not lose that position, but it's a timing for the request to unfreeze the position. So that's the way that I understood the question. So it's only the beginning of February. So he
but we
wouldn't,
know he's going to need that position because that's a senior level position. And so it seems that he would for sure need that position.
Right.
So why would we not unfreeze it so that we can get it going through the process?
It's a conversation with the department about what their plan is, because okay, departments with their March 2nd budgets that are due, they have to submit a 10% reduction. So most likely with this position, because it is a senior level position, there's a possibility that you could be doing an internal promotion that then leaves a lower level position vacant. So I can't speak for my CFO. Well, yes, I can. But most likely that position's going to be unfrozen, and then it won't be an issue. It's just,
okay.
Yeah.
Because I know the board has a priority of making sure that we get all these audits done. This is just the constant
right
drumbeat that we hear in the community, at the state, at the federal level. And so we don't want to get behind and then not catch something, you know, $650,000 that we should have caught, right?
Yeah.
As an example. So, and I had a question too. I don't want to get too deep into this, but so if you have people who are out on leave, do we have any kind of a system where we can backfill those positions mm-hmm. with like temporary staff? Mm-hmm. Is that what we're doing?
We're not doing that. No.
Okay.
And I don't know that the temporary staff would be able to do the work we need.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But in other situations, we do have the ability to use extra help, working retirees, temp help, contract.
Okay. So because we know those positions, the person's coming back. It's just
right.
We want to be accommodating. Okay. Thank you.
I was just going to say one more thing. I agree with Michelle. We'll keep triaging, doing things based on risk. In terms of keeping the AOC and board informed, as part of our quarterly status report that Jose talks about, we have that master schedule that lists our entire audit plan. We will include everything that's getting deferred as we make those decisions, so you all start getting an idea of what's not getting done. And I think that'll be a good mechanism to try to cover your concern as
and
what's
may,
not
it
happening.
It may be a separate item for a while until we kind of get okay. So it's okay. Tactile okay. As well.
Thank you.
All right. I think that moves on to item number 10.
Item 10 is to receive and file Internal Audit Department's Internal Quality Assessment for Fiscal Year 24-25. And we have Michael Steinhaus, IT Audit Manager with Internal Audit Department, to present this item.
Hello. Good morning, committee members.
My name on the mic there.
Good morning. My name is Michael Steinhaus. I'm IT Audit Manager with the Internal Audit Department. I'm here to present the fiscal year 24-25 Internal Quality Assessment that we issued to the committee on January 21st, 2026. The presentation is part of our commitment to transparency and compliance with the global standards. So, the purpose of this memo, the memo communicates the results of our internal quality assessment to the board and senior management, and as is required by the standards, to be done annually. So assessment components, internal quality assessments consist of three components, which are ongoing monitoring, periodic self-assessments, and communication. For ongoing monitoring, that consists of continuous standardization of continuous and standardized supervisor review of engagement, planning, work papers, and reports. Periodic self-assessments, those are periodic assessments to ensure compliance with the global standards and to also identify areas for improvement. And lastly, there's communication, which is part of what we're doing now, is sharing the results with leadership to maintain transparency. So for our memo, the key findings that we noted, I'm proud to say that we achieved full conformance with 51 of the 52 standards and general conformance with standard 6.2. To bring us into full conformance with standard 6.2, we are updating our charter to include performance audits. All right. So next steps as a result of our assessment. We are going to update our internal audit charter and then present the internal quality assessment to the board on March 24th, 2026. And it's important to remember that these steps are important for IAD to remain compliant with the global internal audit standards. And that was it. Anyone have any questions?
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks.
And our next item, please.
Item 11 is to receive and file Internal Audit Department Charter. And we have Aggie Alonso, Internal Audit Director, to present this item.
Thank you so much. As Mike Steinhaus just presented, we follow the global IIA standards. And as part of his assessment, he identified that our charter was not up to date. So our corrective action for that, and we were already doing this anyways, we reviewed our charter. We made changes to incorporate the performance audit function, which was missing, and that's now part of what's within our purview. And then we also made some non-substantive changes to align our charter more closely with the new global IIA standards. But for the most part, it's the same charter, covers all the key areas, and we're just incorporating performance audit. So with that, this is a receive and file according to the bylaws, and then we'll send it to the board for their approval at the March. The last Tuesday meeting in March.
All right, excellent. Questions, comments? All right, moving to item number 12.
Item 12 is to receive and file quarterly status report of auditor controller mandated audits for quarter ended December 31st, 2025. We have Rodrigo Martinez, audit manager with auditor controller's office, to present on this item.
Good morning, committee. My name is Rodrigo. I cover the auditor controller mandated audits. So the first list, or the first item on the list, is cash shortages. We reviewed 6 out of 6 requests sent to us. The next item is the Joint Power Authority and Special Districts. These are the audits that we received and post online. Currently, we completed 23-24 fiscal year. Oh, sorry, 22-23 fiscal year. 23-24, we're still missing one more JPA to have that completed. And then we're currently working on 24-25, which is the current year. And for the reviews that we issued, these are the quarterly review of schedule of assets for quarter ending 9/30/2024 and 12/31/2024. These two reviews were issued on 11/14/2025 with no issues identified. The next one is the March 31st, 2025. We issued a draft and we're still currently working with management on finalizing the report. So once we get a consensus on the report, we will issue that report as well. The next two are the quarterly review of assets for 9/30 and December 31st, 2025. This is pending on March 31st to be completed first, and then we will start the next two reviews. Lastly, we also completed the probation juvenile accounts. The draft was issued on January 22nd, but we actually issued the report with no issues identified. Does anyone have any questions on the items that we reviewed for the mandated audits?
Yeah, I have a question about cash shortages. And in most places that I go to now that are government and or, you know, oriented, they tend to not use cash anymore. Are we about done with cash in our environment?
There's still a few departments that uses cash, especially the Sal. I think you might have a better idea which ones there are, but there's still a few out there, especially the
public health areas, environmental health are the two kind of main ones. Each of those public facing areas. There's very few across the county, most of them are credit card or online.
Supervisor?
Thank you. Does cash include checks? Or is it just?
Yes, it does include checks because okay. In case there were.
So people still use checks? I do. I use checks still for my business. let's see. The Public Cable Television Authority, it shows that we have past due submissions of financial reports, lots of follow-ups. Can you explain that?
Yes, this one, the JPA for this JPA, they were behind a couple of years. We actually are getting caught up, they are getting caught up with their financial statements. They had employees, or they didn't have enough employees to complete the audits. So this is still pending. We're following up at least every quarter, but we're hoping by March we'll have the last one completed.
Okay, who's part of this JPA?
This is the public,
Who are the members? You could just send it to me by email.
This is Public Cable Television Authority. So if you want our contact or who's overseeing them, I could send it to you by email.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I just wanted to follow up on the cash item that came up. There is an executive order that was issued on a federal basis back in March of last year that indicated that the federal government is no longer going to be accepting any cash, and that is physical dollars and coins, effective in September of 2025. So that went into place. There are some exemptions for elderly who don't have the electronic capability. So there are a number of exemptions, but I know the team has been working closely with all of the federal and federal agencies to make sure that all incoming items are no longer going to be in checks, and outgoing items are also electronically for from the federal executive order. I have been trying to work on minimizing cash. I know the auditor controller and I, several years ago, really made a huge push for us to disperse through ACH, which is an electronic form. It's the cheapest way to get money out, and we're really excited. We are rolling forth a new fraud prevention feature that will be implemented, I think, both in CAPS and also in the new Oracle system that will look for kind of like a bad credit card account, where they know that this credit card account is bad. It's a bad bank account. And so it will really enable us to make sure when we're making a distribution to a new entity or a new bank account that that is protected. And a lot of your brokers and agencies may say, oh, you're distributing something to this check. We don't trust that account. And that's really what it is. It's like an early warning system. So on the disbursement side, we are trying to do that. I have talked with CACTAC, which is our county treasurers, because I would like to eliminate or minimize significantly the amount of cash coming in. We do receive a significant amount of cash from property taxes.
You include checks when you say cash?
No, this is just currency and cash.
Really?
So we have significant amounts. We've been working with our partners, trying to move people to get money orders at the bank, because one of the concerns that I have, and I've been trying to work with the federal government, but I have not made progress on it yet, though Young Kim is on the banking committee. Government is not required to fill out this form 8801, which is when you receive in $10,000 more in cash, which isn't going to be animal care. These are not going to be the small agencies, but it is for us in property taxes. You are required, if you're a business, to fill out that form and provide it to the government. And all I'm asking to do is change one word to say that government is required to also fill out this form so that we would be able to utilize that. We are looking at internally doing it. We've been working with our county council to see if we can have an internal form that doesn't go anywhere, but then it puts people on notice that they have to provide this level of information, because it does take a significant amount of taxpayer customer service. We're looking to do maybe a cash-only window again, because it's really starting to slow down the service during the busy time. So that's, you know, on the cash side. And again, we will be working with really the auditor controller on trying to receive funds in electronically, because it is the best way to process those payments coming in. We set up the bank accounts but at this point we haven't, and we would like to put some policies in place. So I know that we're working on it, and I'm available for any questions. Sorry to take a little more time, but I thought it was helpful in this instance.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, so I would need to learn more about what the treasurer just explained, but I would caution, you know, I don't want to put additional cost burdens on residents, especially seniors. ACH does cost for the person that is paying through ACH. It's like a $30 fee in most cases every time you use ACH. So we just don't want to make it too expensive. I wouldn't want to eliminate accepting checks from people, because there's still a lot of, I mean, you know, many of us pay our taxes through impounds or electronically, but there's a lot of people who still write checks, because that might be the only big check they write for the whole year, you know, especially if they're senior citizens. So I just would be cautious about us doing too much to make everything digital, because not everybody is digital, especially as it relates to low-income families.
Chair Judge, it might request, I completely agree. We have e-checks are free. So there's no cost if you go through our website for any of that, and it will stay that way, because we want that. And there would be exemptions, of course, just like at the federal government. I mean, it certainly, I got a very poor response from the other county treasurers. No one wanted to even look at this. There's a lot of you know, marijuana money that comes in that's all cash. I think it's dirty, and it's really tough on the team, the staff, the people.
Well, I wasn't talking about that.
No. But I mean, there is a lot of, you know, obviously I don't know if that's coming from there and then paying property taxes. If we're, you know,
anyway, scrape the cocaine we want to be cognizant of dollars and maybe have an additional revenue source.
Yeah, and especially specifically with the currency item. So we have payment like over $10,000 of green bills being paid, of which the county does not have to fill the currency reporting form out. Currently, is that correct? And it's not you're not able to voluntarily do that either?
We are working. That has been one of my policies to voluntarily do it. We think that would restrict those. And if people had to go into a cash line, that again will deter them and hopefully get a money order. But a money order does have costs. And, you know, there are consequences with that because there are costs for it. So we're trying to look at all of those options along with the other treasurers and to see how this executive order that started is going to affect the state if they're going to do something. But we're certainly all options are on the table. We're just trying to make sure we keep our employees safe. Don't have the you know, the currency coming in. It just takes time. But I just wanted to bring it up. So it's sorry to get into so much detail.
Yeah, and my gut tells me it's probably what Supervisor Foley is bringing up is probably a different target audience than what your concern is probably regarding. So I think it sounds like everyone's on the same page.
This is kind of anecdotal, but I think it goes squarely to the fraud issue. And that is, I have a friend who owns the parking facilities around a Major League Baseball stadium. And when they went from accepting cash as well as credit cards, his revenues increased by about 15%. And the number of cars parked did not appear to him to be any different. So while we want to have exceptions for people that need it, just generally flipping the switch turns us into a different risk assessment for our fraud and a different cost for what we're going to spend to look at fraud.
Right, Chair Johnson. I might also mention that we have that significant mail fraud that occurred from checks in the mail. So nothing is risk-free, as the MGO auditor would say.
Yes, excellent. I have my pen that I'm using right now. So, thank you. All right. Anything else on this item? Okay. Next item, please.
Item 13 is to receive update on ERP implementation, and we have Andrew Hamilton, Auditor Controller, to present the update.
So, just thought I'd give an update to the committee. We're making continued progress on the ERP implementation. As you probably are well aware, I'll just briefly go over those: the integrity data enhanced analytics, the budget, general ledger, procurement, accounting. That's in a separate deliverable. I can now say next year it's going to be implemented, that one. And then payroll and HR in about 2 years. I just want to spend a minute more because I know my alarm is going off. It's noon, so I don't want to be between you and lunch. But one of the major tasks is change management, right? We have a 30-year-old system that has had some upgrades over time, but it absolutely is at the end of its useful life. So we've got outdated accounting methodologies, processes, technology. So we need to change. But people are kind of used to their old ways. So my goal is to wear this hat, this change management hat, encourage an open mind for change that's for the better, not just change for change's sake. So I think that's concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Anyone? All right, hearing nothing, the next item with Casey, I believe.
Yep, item 14 is to receive and file County IT Projects Quarterly Progress Report, and we have Casey Rostenberg, County Chief Information Officer, to present this item.
Good morning, everybody. The report that we'll be reviewing today is for the period from July of 2025 through September of 25. As you know, we run a fiscal year. These projects take some time to collect the data, but I am going to provide an update at the end that's more current. As for this reporting period, if we can go to slide two, thank you. We've got five less projects than we reported on last time, four of those projects completed. One was canceled. We're going a different direction with our agenda management system. So we're reporting on 10 projects at this time. Of the 10, if we can go to slide number four, please. Of the 10, we've got four that are, well, we only have two because two of these four have already completed, that are critical from a project scheduling perspective. None from a budgeting perspective are currently critical. Of the two that are critical, if we can go to slide eight, please. Of the two that are critical, Sheriff's Department is continuing to work through the rewrite of their automated jail system. You may recall this has been on their agenda for a very long time. They had some vendor issues. They are making some progress, but it's slow progress, so that's why that's showing delayed. We, OCIT, had a project to implement multi-factor authentication where you require both your password and another device to effectively get into county systems. We had some material defects from the vendor for the devices that were actually being used. That's been resolved now. And a new problem has come up recently in that these devices cost money, and a lot of agencies, due to the budget shortfall, are struggling with how to implement the technology. So we're working with those agencies. There are some options for employees to use their personal cell phone. It doesn't get into any kind of concerns from an HR perspective. So we're looking to, especially large agencies like SSA, we're looking at other methods where we don't have to buy a device to actually get that second party authentication working. And that's my report.
I have just one question. On quarter two, that's page eight, the identity and badge data integration was canceled, and I didn't see it moved anywhere else on your schedule.
Yeah, so we project projects, and then funding has to come after that. There were some funding issues with that, so we had to pick and choose, with the budget situation being what it is, to defer that project at some point in the future. But since there isn't funding, we just put that project on hold for now.
Casey, I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate you giving us an update every time, because I know this is voluntary, not part of your portfolio. And I really appreciate the way in which internal audit and you have worked together. And you know, we know that in this risk assessment, they talked about some IT issues. And I appreciate the way that you make sure that this is integrated completely in the audit process, because without you, that would be much more difficult. We'd need two or three more people on our budget if we did that. So thank you, Casey.
Thank you.
All right, excellent. Well, I think unless there's anything else, we'll conclude our meeting of the Investment Oversight and Audit Oversight Committees and adjourning at 12:05. Next regular meeting will be held Thursday, May 14th at 10:30. And thank you, everyone.
Yeah, if you need extra help retiring by that day or public conference.
I also.